It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 334. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can leave me a voicemail message, and I have four voicemails tonight that we're going to kick the show off with in a minute. Phone number is 240-949-2450. You can send me an email with your tech question, comment on the show, any kind of recommendations for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can check out the wiki at mtswiki.com for all the archives of all the past 333 Mike Tech shows, going back almost 6 years. And you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. That's where I will let everybody know when I'm broadcasting, when I go live. Not a lot of detail. I don't tweet a lot. Usually it's when the show posts it. And then you can follow me on Facebook. Very simple. Facebook.com/MikeTechShow. That's where I'll post a little more when I have time. But lately I've been pretty busy, so which I'm very happy, because when you're working for yourself, when you're doing consulting, it's nice to be busy. And knock wood, I've been busy the last few weeks. Here's how I want to start the show off. First, a big thank you to everybody who has been going to podcastawards.com, go to the technology category, and pick the Mike Tech Show and vote, because I've been nominated this year for the best technology podcast. And voting's only got another week left, and you can vote every day. So let's get the vote out. I've never done this before, asking like this. Go to podcastawards.com, spread the word, and cast a vote for the Mike Tech Show. I really appreciate that. With that, a quick reminder, it's Christmas time. If you are buying anything from Amazon.com, or you're looking for some gifts and you can't think of anything, remember, you can get an Amazon gift certificate. Don't forget to use my link on the website at MikeNation.net, MikeTechShow.com. Click on that link. It'll take you to Amazon. Then you can go anywhere you want, make a purchase. I get a commission on that, and it really helps with the show, and I really appreciate that and all your support. So now, let's get to the voicemails. I will comment on them, and then I got a large stack of email to get to, and I will catch up as best I can. So the first voicemail is from Kate in Canada, and she has some interesting comments on the last show. Give a listen.
Hi, Mike. It's Katester, Kate Eels. I'm calling from Kelowna in British Columbia, Canada. I have some comments on show 333. First of all, it's Sunday afternoon, and you recorded that show Thursday night, so I might not be the first person to have mentioned this, but in case no one else has, your GPS unit being an hour out sounds like a daylight savings problem to me. You should check and see if there's a setting to tell it that daylight saving time is not in effect, or if it's an older unit, you might need to patch it, because the start and end dates for daylight saving time have changed around in the last 4 or 5 years. But the hour does sound like a daylight saving time issue, and so consult the website or the documentation for something to do with that, and I'm sure that will solve the problem. Secondly, I just wanted to mention about libraries. I don't go to the library to browse anymore, but we have a regional library, and we have a wonderful online system where we can browse the catalog for the entire region, and in fact, sister libraries, if you will, all the way down to Vancouver and all the way up to, I don't know, the North Pole. I can look for a book and reserve it. And when it shows up in my branch, I get an email. I go down there and I pick it up. And it works great. In addition, we have audiobooks that we can download, and we have things in Adobe, I don't know, Adobe something, and EPUB format. We have books that can be read on an iPad. That stuff is not instantaneous, but it's within hours rather than the 3 or 4 days that it might take to get a book. So libraries are an excellent resource, whether you go to them or not. And I encourage anybody to go to the library, sign up for a library card, and then explore the library online. Because, you know, if it's 2 in the morning and you want to look for something in the library, you can do that online. I know I do. Finally, I want to mention something about people who set the clocks 5 minutes or 10 minutes ahead of real time in order to fool themselves into getting somewhere on time. I'm not one of those people, but I have lived with people like that. You've just got to trust me. People like that are just like that. That's what they need to do to get through the day. The rest of us just have to be patient with that. And we have to respect that. So it probably was your fault, Mike, that she missed that train, because you're the one who insisted on changing the clock and you didn't change the clock back. So just swallow hard and say, well, I'm really sorry about that. I'll remember to change the clock back in the future. People who have to do that have to do that. We just have to roll with it. I think maybe for Dorothy, in addition to working outside the home full-time, she's probably working full-time in the home, which, as far as I can determine, is filled with men and pets. So she's probably doing the cooking and the cleaning and the picking up the dry cleaning and the picking up the books from the library. You know, if she needs an extra 5 minutes of sleep in the morning and she has to fool herself, then she needs that extra 5 minutes of sleep. You got to roll with it. That's my opinion. You ask for my opinion. There you have it. Thanks for a great show, Mike. As always, really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Kate. And I asked for comments. Last week I mentioned I actually set the clock in my wife's car to the normal time, and she got mad because she always keeps it 5 minutes fast. While we were traveling over the holidays, over Thanksgiving. And then when we were done, I didn't set the clock back ahead. And then she blamed me for missing her train and being late for work on Monday morning because she thought she had 5 minutes that she didn't have. And I wanted to know, is that reasonable? Is that what happens? And I guess I was wrong, right? There's Kate taking my wife's side on that one. Have some other comments here. Give a listen.
Hello, Mike. This is Alan Nation here up in the state of Washington. Calling to follow up on the hosting email that I sent in. Yes, I agree with you. The unlimited hosting is not going to be a true statement, but I would never host a business on any kind of those plans if they needed real robust throughput. And it's the site I'm using for the hosting unlimited is mostly for the data storage, and it's for my church, so we're not really using the limitation of the bandwidth. I agree with you. GoDaddy has always got good service and good deals going on, but, you know, I can't even let my kids go to their site. They seem to be the hosting company that takes the sleaze factor and uses it for marketing. And every time I see their ad or have somebody go to their website, it just makes me sick that they chose that marketing route. Anyway, great show. Appreciate all the information you're giving out. And I look forward to hearing the next show and getting some more good info. Thanks, Mike.
Hey, thanks, Alan, for that. And he's right. It's interesting how GoDaddy has taken that commercial sleaze approach to marketing, you know, having the sexy women and everything try to advertise and get your attention. And I never thought of that about, boy, would you send your kids to the GoDaddy site? So, but they have a great service. I have four websites hosted with GoDaddy. Love their tech support, and never had a problem. And I'm glad he understood my comment that there is no such thing as unlimited bandwidth, whatever provider you have. It doesn't exist. No provider in the world can give you unlimited bandwidth. And as long as you understand that and know how much bandwidth you're really going to need, and that's hard to measure when you're starting up. But once you get going, you know how many downloads are happening, how many hits are you getting, and then you take that and then make sure you put yourself into the right plan so this way your website will be available and you'll have the right response for anybody coming to your website. That's the key, getting into the right plan with your hosting provider. Okay, we got some more voicemails. We hate to keep beating a dead horse with the printer issue, but a listener sent this in. I'm going to play it, and I have lots of comments about it.
Hi, Mike. This is Brad out in California. I've been listening to your latest shows about sharing the HP printer from another computer, and I hate to continue to beat a dead horse, but I've never actually tried to do this with Windows 7 to XP, but I know I've done it with 2000, XP, and Vista. To me, it seems really easy. You go ahead on the computer that has the printer attached. To me, since it's attached by a USB, any network settings are irrelevant. And you right-click on it, go to Properties, and share it. Make sure the drivers are loaded for that printer, and if you need to, go to additional drivers. And once it's shared, go to the other printer, and in the Windows 7, in the search bar, type in backslash computer name, and then backslash, and hit enter, and it should bring up anything that's shared on that computer. And then click on, highlight that printer, and right-click, go to connect, or double-click it, whatever you want to do. And if you don't have the drivers, and at that point, you can go ahead and load the drivers, and to me, it seems like it'd be a piece of cake. But maybe I'm wrong. If you can straighten me out and tell me that Windows 7 is different, I'm all ears. But to me, that seems like a very easy process. Great show, and I'll talk to you later. Thanks. Bye.
Brad, you're wrong. Windows 7 is different. It is a problem when you are trying to print from a printer that is shared on XP. If you do this, if you have an XP system and you share a printer and you try to print to it from Windows 7, you will absolutely run into the problem that I ran into with my client and that everybody has recognized, and there's a fix. I reviewed it last week, and I hope you reviewed and listened to show 333 because we go over the solution. So what Brad said, it seemed like, boy, it's simple. Sure, it's easy to just share the printer and then browse the network, pick the printer, say right-click, connect, boom, you're done. Well, no. It will appear that it's working, but the driver is set to the wrong place. It is not going to the right path when you do that from Windows 7, and you have to create a local port to the share in order to correct that. I don't think it's a bug in Windows 7. I just think it's a way that now Windows 7 is looking at the paths of the printers on the network. You know, we do have to evolve as it's a new operating system. So just keep that in mind, that extra step. And we covered that and we did beat it up. Brad, I just wanted to play your message and respond to that because lots of people out there have run into the very same issue. The last voicemail, and then we will get to lots of email here.
Hey, Mike, this is Randy from Tampa, Florida, and I was just listening to your show this week. This call regarding the gentleman who was having an issue with his ISP speed. He was paying for one speed, but he was seeing another speed in his browser. What you didn't mention was that when you purchase your speed, they sell it by the megabit, but when you're downloading files in your browser, it reports it in megabytes. So you have to take your megabits that you're buying from your ISP, divide that by 8, and then that's how you get the megabyte. So the 2 megabytes that he was actually seeing in the browser is actually correct. If he does that math, he'll find that he's probably getting exactly what he's expecting. Also, I use the speedtest.net as well to test customers' internet speeds. I find that different servers from around the country will give you different results. I find that the Washington, D.C. server usually tends to give me the best speed rating than any other server in the country. So that's usually when I need a speed test, I go to the Washington, D.C. servers rather than anywhere else. Hope that helps. Love your show. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Randy, for your comments. And, yes, I do pick the Washington, D.C. server over other ones for any speed test that I do. Let's try to get caught up on some voicemail. The topic, centralized antivirus. This is from Michael. A couple years ago, I decided to give AVG Network Edition a try and have been happy with performance and centralized management. Recently, I came across a USB virus that AVG only detected when I did a manual scan. And after surfing a little, I'm finding that a majority of professionals are steering away from AVG. My license is about to expire, and I have to decide whether I should renew my 25-seat license or seek an alternative. For years, I have been installing Avira free on my friends' computers. After hearing you rave about it on the podcast, and couldn't be happier. What centralized antivirus have you or your buddies been installing at your clients? And this is Mike from Poughkeepsie. Mike, I did a bake-off a year ago with a big client in the areas. What I came up with, the results, we compared McAfee, Norton, Trend Micro, and a program called Sophos. And I used to love Trend Micro, and I love their office suite for protection that they have. It's reasonably priced. It's easy to push from a server to manage. But from a performance standpoint, Sophos, and I will link that in the chat because some of you may not have realized it, because they don't have a consumer product. They only play in the corporate space. And we liked Sophos over all of them. A lot of security experts, engineers and technicians, love a program called Nod32. I used it a couple years ago, and I just haven't had any exposure or been using it. If you are in a nonprofit organization or non-commercial use, I love Avira. It works great. If you are in a corporate environment, I strongly recommend that you take a look at Sophos. Great program, and I think you're going to like it. This is from Jeff. Mike, I have one of my computers running Windows 7 where I use Firefox. I have a problem with the way the bookmarks display from the bookmark toolbar when you have a folder full of bookmarks. In XP, the space between the bookmarks appears to be half the distance of the height of the bookmark, providing more data in the same space as what is happening in Windows 7. Windows 7 has the spacing double of XP. The gap is the same height as the bookmark versus half the height in XP. This equates to where XP will display 20 bookmarks in the same space that Windows 7 displays only 15. This is a problem when your list on XP stays in the screen and Windows 7 requires scrolling. I'm hoping that someone has a solution to this issue. With bookmarks in Windows 7 for Firefox, I've never really noticed the height difference, you know, compared to when I'm using it on XP. I've never noticed that. And I have a lot of bookmarks and I have a lot of folders. And, you know, normally I have to go down and I have to scroll, you know, hit the little arrow to keep going and to kind of feed the scroll. I just haven't noticed that. If anybody has a fix or a way to make those adjustments or a way to fix it for Jeff and any kind of recommendations or tips, let me know and I will put them out in the show here and I will also let Jeff know. So thank you. This is from Gary. Mike, I'm a big fan of the show. Keep up the good work. You do a great job of keeping your material understandable, yet not too dumbed down so that important technical information is not lost. Well, thank you. This is not an easy task and you do a great job. I've been a casual listener for years, but I've recently started listening more regularly, and I'm in the process of going through your back episodes with the intent of listening to every one until I'm caught up. I'm on show 300 right now, so I have a long way to go. Wow, you do. Boy, you're going to OD on my voice, so I hope you can take it. If you plan on responding to this on a show, please respond with a reference to the show number so I can jump ahead and listen. Here's my question. I have a mix of several different layer 3 and 4 switches in the network environment that I support. The majority are 3COM super stack switches. Wow, that's pretty old. These switches used to come with a very useful piece of software called 3COM Network Supervisor, which interrogated and automatically discovered and mapped all the 3COM switches. After running the scan, the end result was a map of my entire network. I could see each switch and the IP address of the machine that was connected to each port of every 3COM switch on my network. As you know, HP acquired 3COM. The free tool is still available, but the activation site is down, so I cannot register it and activate it, even though I was entitled to use it for free at one time. I'm looking for something free or cheap, and this is the problem, that has similar functionality. That doesn't exist, unfortunately. Something that can interrogate at least my 3COM switches, given the administrator credentials, and map out each of the devices that's plugged in by port number. If there's a utility that can do other manufacturers, Cisco, that would be a bonus, but not critical. If you or any of your listeners knows anything, I'd love to hear about it and try it out. Thanks a lot and keep up the good work. Gary, this is for all of the network engineers, network professionals out there that are hearing this podcast. What do we have that's free or open source? There is a program, I think there's Nmap, and there's a couple that I just can't think of that's on the tip of my tongue, and I know and can find them before I post the show notes. You'll find some additional links. I will put it out. There is one that I know SolarWinds has products that will do a scan, but they charge you per device that's on your network. So if you want to manage a lot of devices and check that out, there are lots of programs out there that you could spend thousands of dollars in being able to do this properly. To do it for free or very inexpensive, I'm not sure what's out there. There are a couple programs, like I said, that I remember hearing about but have not worked with. So need some help here with some open source recommendations if there are any good ones out there that you're using so I can pass it on. That's a great question, Gary. Thank you. This is from Anthony, and I've responded to this right away. Here's the question. Hey, Mike, I'm working on a new gateway laptop. My client had trouble with her wireless network, and an AT&T guy remoted in to fix it. Next time she booted, it would go past the BIOS, and it just says no bootable disk. Windows 7 won't repair. It just gives an hourglass when it tries. I made a Windows 7 repair disk from an ISO file I downloaded, and it also just gives an hourglass. Tried to repair with Windows 7 install disk, same thing. I pulled out the hard drive, put in a dock, and ran Crystal Disk Info on it. It says caution, bad sectors. Since the laptop is new and appears to have a bad hard drive, should she just use the warranty, or do you have any tips? This is her laptop for school, and she needs the info on it as soon as possible. And I said, you absolutely need a new hard drive. While it is in the dock, grab all of her files off the system and then use the warranty to get a new drive as soon as possible. Once Crystal Disk Info, which is a great utility to give you that first take on the hard drive status, do you have a problem? You're going to get a red light if there's major problem, a yellow warning light if it's going bad or they're starting to have problems, and then a nice blue light. I don't know why they didn't make it green, but it's blue, that everything's good. And it'll say good, bad, or warning. It's very clear. Run that first when any hard drive is in question. And if it's red or yellow, get the data off as soon as possible, buy a new hard drive. Or if it's under warranty, contact the manufacturer and get another hard drive. This is from Philip. Hi, Mike. Missed not having the podcast last Thursday. Hope your 50th birthday trip to New Orleans was good. This is from a couple weeks ago. Just to give a heads up on Carbonite backup. I back up all my data, but some files and folders on my computer that backed up fine, I noticed could not restore from Carbonite website. It gave me the message, remote file access is currently unable to locate files and folders with special characters, and it lists all the characters, and extra spaces at the end of the folder name in their names. I had to go back to my computer and rename the files and folders, then it was okay. So if anybody is backing up with Carbonite, to check their backup to make sure they can be restored. Hope to hear some tech vets soon. Thanks, Philip. And it's the Philip Computer Repair. Well, that is very interesting. I never heard that as an issue with Carbonite, but what he says applies to every backup plan that you have. You must attempt to do a recovery or restore of data. It's the only way to check the integrity of your backup. You have to. You know, when there is going to be a serious problem, that's when you're going to find out that your backup process, there was a flaw, a problem, and you're not getting everything, or it hasn't been working like it should. You must test. It's backup, test, the restore. Then you can feel comfortable. So he's right, and it's a great reminder to all of us to go through the process and test your backup. This is from the computer doctor. Hey, Mike, I love the idea of the little power strip adapter things that you mentioned last week, and this is going way back over a month, and I wanted to share a few tips with fellow techs and consultants out there. Our tool bags are pretty light. I keep an older, small laptop in there as I don't have to break it down that often. Most house calls that require multiple computers, the clients already have another computer and I can use the ping or client or whatever. And we often know when we're getting into something big that will require one of the powerhouse laptops. The bag has a few screwdrivers, a book of bootable CDs and utilities, and the invoicing clipboard. The computer doctor ambulance, on the other hand, looks like a small computer parts depot, like the trunk of my car. We have, at all times, a wireless router, currently a Linksys recertified special picked up from Woot.com a few weeks back on a great price, a basic ATX power supply with twin SATA connectors, a backpack full of miscellaneous cables, VGA, patch cables of various lengths, power cords, USB extension cords, and so on. We also have a couple of cheap surge protector power strips for the clients that have massive rat's nests of cables behind their desk. We also have cable zip ties for just this reason, and use this as an upscale opportunity. When finished with the repair job, we will offer to perform additional cable management for $10, $20 extra, depending on how bad it is. This not only keeps us on the job longer, thus the clock keeps rolling, we become huge heroes in our clients' eyes, as most people hate cable management and many are afraid of it. We are still looking for a great cheap way to label the cables. So if you have a good option, would appreciate it. It is also very important to have a USB mouse and both a USB and PST keyboard. A few cans of compressed air, large toolbox, and a small assortment of RAM are also important. Even for the small one-man shop, work-from-home guys, that's where I started. It is important to have an assortment of IDE, 2.5-inch, 3.5-inch, and SATA 2.5-inch, 3.5-inch hard drives. We all know how often drives die, and while many residential clients might be able to wait a few days for you to order a new drive, most business clients can't wait. That's correct. That's why I carry several hard drives in my trunk. This makes great opportunity for profit. You can offer the client several hard drive size options. We typically will start with whatever they had in there and then give them some larger options as an upsell opportunity. For example, they have an 80 gig drive, and while that may only cost you $40, you offer it to them for $40 plus your profit margin. But then you can say for just $30 more, we can double your drive size up to 160. Now, just right there, I don't carry anything smaller than 500 gig in my car. I just will make them pay for the 500 gig drive. All right, back to the email. And for only $15 more, then we can go up to 250 or 320 and so on. The customers don't know that jump from 80 to 160 gig only cost you $5 or $10. And if you have a small assortment on hand, you can say we can turn your computer around in only 1 or 2 days. But for that rapid turnaround, you can charge an expedited service fee. Businesses will eat this up, and you are a hero because you got it done fast. Plus, you also just made an additional fee. One more tip. It is also a great idea to keep an assortment of inexpensive external drive enclosures. A common scenario is a client is having computer troubles with an older system. They decide not to have it repaired, but want the data backed up. As long as their drive isn't a problem, then simply pop their drive into the external enclosure. We typically will delete or hide the Windows directory and so forth, and just show the user profiles so they can easily browse their data as needed. It is simple and a very quick way to do data recovery, and you can charge a nice margin for the enclosure. Mike, where do you go for most of your parts, like hard drives and power supplies, etc.? We have been using mostly Newegg. I use Newegg a lot. But recently rediscovered how great the prices are of hard drives over at Geeks.com. And Monoprice is the only place to go for cables and mounts. eBay is still the best place for DC jacks and laptop LCD panels. That is the computer doctor. And I want to thank you for those great comments on what you carry in your bag. I love the way you call the computer doctor ambulance. That's awesome. I buy from the two places you mentioned, Newegg and Monoprice. Do not forget Amazon. I buy a lot from Amazon. They have very good prices for things. Not everything, but there is a lot of sometimes hard drives I've seen cheaper at Amazon than Newegg lately. A place for those power liberators, that's what they're called, and those unusual cables that you can't get at Monoprice, or those adapters little things. Cyberguys.com. They are in Rancho Cordova, California. Great online site. And they have a great magazine once you start buying that you'll get. That's always good to see some unusual items that can make that difference between you and your competition on having creative solutions for your client. Maybe that strange monitor stand to hold multiple monitors, or that ergonomic desk, or that, you know, there are so many little things that if you know where to go, that will differentiate you from anybody else that's trying your competition. CyberGuys is a good place. And, you know, pretty much that's it for buying, stocking up my supplies. I will always look for great deals on MonoPrice, like the USB wireless adapter, and of course, any kind of cable I will only get from MonoPrice. So that's it for stores. If I think of anything else, I'll mention it in a future show. I know after I'm done recording tonight, I'll be like, oh, yeah, what about these couple other sites? But they're pretty much it. Amazon, Newegg, CyberGuys. They're my favorite sites. So with that, I do not have any music lined up for tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show. I want to thank you for your support. Please don't forget to go over to podcastawards.com, cast a vote for the Mike Tech Show, and use my link on amazon.com for your purchases for Christmas. Still have plenty of time to shop and get the gifts delivered in plenty of time before Christmas. And there's some other great affiliates on my site. Laptop repair videos from Steve Cherubino. Haven't mentioned them in a while. That is great for someone, the geek who is starting to get into computer repair, but you know what? He needs the training on how to repair laptops. The link is right on the left-hand side of my website. Also, how to build that great tech repair website. It's right there. Set of videos that are provided by Steve that are great training. And then also the computer business repair kit from TechNibble. And also I have a buy.com and GoDaddy links. So whatever you're using, if you use any of those products or vendors, please check it out and support the show. That's it. Schedule for the rest of the month. Thursday nights look good from here until Christmas. New Year's Eve. I will do a New Year's Eve show on Friday night, and I will not do a show Thursday that week. I'll save it for one more night, and New Year's Eve, I'll do a show. I'm going to start it at 10 o'clock Eastern time, and this will be my third annual New Year's Eve show, and as you know, I go on to 3, 4, 5 a.m. in the mornings. Have lots of fun, and we will do it again this year. That's it. Thank you very much, and I will talk to you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.